Hey, everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of the Mobilecast, number 217. I am actually sitting here with a very good friend of mine, Nick McGuire. He is the head of Enterprise Mobile at CCS Insight, head analyst for that. So, Nick, introduce yourself, and then we're going to dive right in.
Hey, everybody. Had to say it. For those of you regular listener to this fantastic podcast. So it's an honor and privilege actually to be here. And I always wanted to do that actually. That's the funniest bit of your podcast is how you say, hey, everybody. But anyway, lead CCS Insights Enterprise Research, longstanding enterprise mobility analyst. I've been in the industry working in the carrier side, BT Global Services. Most recently, I came to CCS Insight from running the Global Enterprise Mobility Alliance, GEMA, for a little bit under 2 years. Where, for those of you that aren't familiar with GEMA, it's a joint venture made up of a network of local managed mobility service providers from around the world selling global services to multinationals. So, been 99 is when I started out in this space, if I'm honest. So it's, yeah,
he doesn't. He really doesn't look that old. He's lost a little hair since we spent a lot of time together a few years ago. But he does not look nearly that as old as the rest of us who've been in this space that long. Nick and I are here in Toronto at the Mobile Enterprise Canada event. So there's some great people, some great companies here, and Nick was the chairperson of the event, and he did a great opening segment talking about mobile maturity, some of the research that he's been doing. And what we're going to do today is I'm going to ask Nick to start talking about some of the research he's done, some of the surprising things he came up with. We're going to pop some questions in there, and then we'll kind of probably go off book about halfway through.
Brilliant.
So Nick, you've been doing a lot of research into the enterprise for years.
Yep.
You came from IDC.
That's right. Yep.
And then GEMA, and now you're at CCS Insight, and you've kind of actually put the enterprise practice into CCS Insight.
That's it, yeah, because CCS Insight, many of you may not necessarily be fully familiar with CCS Insight, because we've historically been a consumer mobility research and advisory business boutique, 30 analysts globally, offices in the UK. I'm based in the UK. Based in London. We're in London, and we also...
He's a Canadian based in London, so it's like coming home for him to this week.
It is.
I left him speechless there by abusive
on the accent. I mean, the accent in Canada, I get so much abuse. It's hilarious. But yeah, it's great. I mean, awesome to be back. I really do love this place. But yeah, and we've also, CCS, we're also in California as well. And we, it's quite interesting because, the walls have collapsed now between consumer and enterprise. And so we think that gives us kind of a new perspective on how we see the space evolving. We've tracked trends in personal computing quite substantially, since our founding in the sort of mid-90s. So a lot of the guys cover a lot of the interesting trends on the personal computing side. So my job is basically to take a lot of that good stuff and start to apply it into what it means for the business space.
Approaching the enterprise from the consumer angle, taking all that great stuff that CCS has been doing, and then your knowledge of the enterprise, and
it's bringing it together. Yeah, like we do a lot of consumer work. We do a lot of consumer surveys, and I've obviously done a lot more employee driven surveys in addition to decision maker or buyer surveys as well. And it's quite fascinating what's going on in purchasing. Like we see roughly about 70% now of mobility purchasing, across apps and hardware, coming from outside of IT. There's a new buyer that has emerged around mobility, and that is largely born from the user, right?
So let's actually hit that. You guys, before you did the research, you guys made a guess that it was about 40%, if I recall.
Yeah, it was on apps. We were thinking, okay. I mean, I think there was a trend that we saw around mobility, particularly with apps, that that was kind of in two extremes. You had the really advanced companies that have done a lot of apps. They industrialized the governance. They industrialized the development and the tooling, and also the process to deploy apps or even to build apps in the enterprise. And I think you look at some of those companies, and they're way in the advance in the sense of look, we let the business run out and build their own and buy their own. If it touches the back end systems, if there's the governance procedure around that, we own, but we just let the business go. So there's a bit of that in the advanced space that was kind of showing the way, but there was also, you know, the shadow effect and companies that are not yet that mature in building out the competency around it, that were struggling to keep up with the business.
So basically, you made this guess that it was,
so we thought 40%. We thought 40% coming outside. We thought enterprise apps, 40% of all spending with a mix of the advanced versus behind, would register to about 40%. So we put that prediction out last year.
So 40% was from the line of business outside of IT. 60% was being spent by IT. What did you find?
Well, we found, we were way wrong. I mean, we, as I say, we just fielded this decision maker. We asked the buyers explicitly what they felt the proportion of their mobility spend sat within IT versus non-IT. And it was, 70% of spend was outside of IT, according to them. Now, IT spend's growing up as well. Yes. The majority was coming from outside the business. It's coming out of the departments. And
it's funny, having come from an enterprise, that number does not surprise me at all.
Yeah. I remember you saying that.
IT spends more of its time on management, security, those sorts of pieces. And, there are two questions when you start looking at app development. Where do your developers sit? Do your developers sit in IT? Do your developers sit in the line of business? Or do they have their own separate organization?
That's
and
right.
If they have their own separate organization, is that organization part of IT or not?
That's right.
And that's a whole nother question. And,
it's so mixed, isn't it?
It's mixed, and the very large organizations have developers in all three. And so what you end up, what I saw at least was there were developers in the line of business and they were doing stuff. And then as you matured, and I've seen this in a bunch of companies, those developers would be pulled together in some sort of center of excellence or at least a governance model.
Right.
So that they could, could share stuff and all that. And, I think you had another slide that talked about as you move to the right, you become more mature.
Yeah.
That a lot of that is based around companies going to standards. And I'll leave that opening for you to talk
about. I think what's interesting from an analyst point of view is, we can always ask, what are the kind of sector driven trends around mobility and who are kind of really driving real value from a sector point of view. There's a geographical point of view. I live in London. A big part of covering enterprise mobility in London is key because there's a lot of global customers, a lot of heads of mobile situated in the London base. I have pleasure of interacting and doing roundtables with a lot of them. Through a lot of this over time, it was quite fascinating because we got asked, is there geographical trends associated with mobility and mobility competency? And in fact, it's really none of those. It is some of those, but it's actually the biggest dictation of how we see this market evolving is entirely based around maturity, around competency. It's a subjective mix by organization of technology competency around mobility and organizational change. The change elements that accompany that technology competency build within companies really dictates where the companies are. And actually, it's very important for companies like, VMware and others to look at selling by maturity as opposed to other kind of traditional ways in enterprise mobility. Because we find that the maturity is highly variable, but it's also, from our experience, linear. So companies have to go through some foundational elements of technology build, but also change in order for them to move and progress.
You have to trip and fall. It's interesting, when you talk about the maturity model, people think, well, I can go from A to B to C and, now I'm at level 3, level 4 of the maturity model. And if you watch babies grow up, kids grow up, they always make mistakes, and it's how they learn from their mistakes that actually encourages that maturity. If all you have is success, it's very difficult to mature.
Yeah, true.
It doesn't mean that you always talk about that success, those failures, but that's part of it. Now, you have an interesting maturity model because we talked about it a little bit yesterday afternoon. I disagree with the way you define some of that maturity.
Okay. Yeah.
And your lowest maturity level, your beginners, your infants. I guess you had three levels. So you had 60% of the companies, I think, right now at the low end of the maturity.
At the foundational stage, yeah, which is...
You defined it as, well, they're using MDM, and I'd say... I don't think MDM or EM, you know, because you actually have mobile, you have mobile application management in the second stage.
Yes.
Which is
yes.
called?
Well, it's basically the second stage is an umbrella for app competency, industrialization of apps. So part of that is the governance and management of them. But it's also the build. And the building of that as well.
And so I would actually say EMM still belongs in the foundational stage. There are parts of EMM that reach into that second stage.
Got it.
But I don't know that I don't know that that's a requirement. I do think that as EMM vendors start including lifecycle.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that they're growing bigger. They're actually adding to how we enable people to do things. And that's where I think, you know, your second level was really, how do you build apps? How do you do all that?
Yeah, apps is absolutely critical. And then the change of areas around organizational elements around the app, you know, broadly industrialization of apps, and that competency build, within companies. And those change elements are largely about, to this point, you know, dedicated competency in app development. So whether that's moving from, you know, web developer universe into mobile and, you know, formalizing that, whether it's taking a team that works with outsourcers and they have an outsourcing model and working there, or if it's actually just going out, like you've seen some of the banks, right? You know, some of the banks have gone out and bought app development firms globally. You know, it's a huge source of competitive advantage for many industries that are hugely customer facing. So it's the kind of, you know, formalization there. And then of course, the other organizational piece is actually even within IT, having, you know, mobility, you know, formed as a team within IT in itself is actually an important move, because what we've seen in the early foundational phases is that, you know, it was everywhere, right? Like you had it in the old BEZ environment and messaging and collaboration in IT. You had it in, you know, and you came out of Sanofi, right? And your mobile engineering team was presumably under infrastructure. And I've seen that in a lot of the pharmas, right? They have their mobile team in infrastructure.
We were actually split in three, and then we were joined all together, and we actually ended up under end user services.
End user technology solutions.
You know, on the other hand, when I did mobile back in 99, 2000, 2001, it was part of the email team because you were doing BlackBerry.
That's right.
You know, Good was just coming out. Let's get to that. So you have 60% of the foundation.
That's right.
Yep. In your middle level, what was it? 20, 30%?
30%. 30%, yeah.
And then the organizations you consider mature, so you got 10% left. What defines them?
There's a number of streams to this, you know, and obviously, you know, it's a combination of kind of a technology. What are the technology priorities to those companies that are really advanced? What are the challenges they're facing? And, you know, and the companies that have moved into this industrial phase of apps, they're the ones who are obviously achieving a lot more value and business value. There's a lot more reinvention of workflow and processes.
I love that term because that's something I use. You use reinvention. I use reimagining processes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And it's not
enabling or extending existing. It's much more, okay, how are we reinventing how we work based on new experiences? Because oftentimes the questions we get asked is like, okay, what are the next wave of apps? If you look at the classic enterprise app trends that are out there, you know, it's you get the horizontal stuff that have the big, and then you got this huge long tail because they're highly, you know, specific to workflows or processes or industries. But people always ask, well, okay, we understand these. What's the next wave? And it's almost difficult to predict because a lot of those next wave of apps are going to be coming from the user themselves, right? So how the
user depends on the industry, the user, what they do. And, you know, because I love the term of, and that's, I think you could actually define a different maturity model based upon, because right now, and I think you heard me say it this morning on stage, email itself is not a mature model. That's the same as giving out devices. You gave out email. Email is table stakes. Doing that doesn't mean you've done anything. Yes, email is important. It's the first thing you give out. I get it. But you haven't really enabled your people. I mean, you could open up your laptop and do it. Yes, you could say, well, there are places the laptop wouldn't work. Sure. But, you know, I used to be able to carry around a folder of paper. It's a question of how, you know, I think you hit on it a second ago. It's taking existing processes and enabling them. You know, maybe changing something from paper to mobile or an iPad. But I think that that last phase is I start creating new processes out of old ones or for even new things that are completely different approach. I'm approaching it that all my people are mobile. They're doing the job where they are. That information's passing back and forth.
Yep.
And I think you could actually create a whole maturity model just based upon those.
You could, because in that third tier, by the way, is fascinating. It's the 10%, because, you know, we know this because the vast majority of companies still haven't even developed custom apps for their employees. Like, we know this from our surveys. We can track that. We tend to run wild about where enterprises are in their mobility journey. And, you know, so many companies haven't even got there, but the 10% have, these are the guys that have done over 30, 40 apps. But the most fascinating thing isn't about the technology, even though there's a lot of conversation with companies in this space about how they do, you know, API first, how do they do backend as a service, how do they integrate into legacy mainframes, what are the architectural considerations around shifting some of those systems into a much more mobile friendly environment. But the big things here are the changes within IT. Like IT in this third phase is, you know, I hate to use the term reinvented, but it's actually rebrand. There's a whole new competency in, you know, working with users, the organizational model that allows IT to do ride-alongs, to get close to users on an ongoing basis, possibly even, and I've seen it in some organizations, fascinating, how they've just reorged and actually created dotted, you know, teams that are dotted into IT that are permanently sat within the business itself.
And it's interesting because I've seen that as well, and some of those work really well. But it becomes a partnership and a trust issue,
right?
Which actually leads to the next question, because a dinner conversation, I guess, an hors d'oeuvre conversation last night, mobile center of excellence,
right?
Term thrown around a lot.
Mm-hmm. I wrote a white paper on it in like 2011, so yeah, it's been around a lot.
Are they even out there?
They're not. No, they're not. I think the problem is that we have this assumption of what a mobile center of excellence is. This is like siloed, you know, overlay IT team that has authority to go out and dictate, not necessarily dictate, but implement best practice, but governance and frameworks around mobility. And why I think we don't see much of them is I think because, and I think you'll probably go in this direction as well. Well, then we should have a COE for CRM. We should have a COE for, you know, ERP. We should have, you know, we'll have all these COEs all over the business. It doesn't scale. I think what has formed, maybe not in the classic sense of a mobile center of excellence, but you're starting to see, and again, this is debatable, but you're starting to see digital. You're starting to see this digital innovation.
Well, yeah,
business innovation.
They call it digital transformation. And, you know, people have the title, you know, CTO of digital transformation, everything else. And sorry to call it BS, but it's the same title that was chief mobile officer. It's the same title, you know, chief
digital.
What's
different, though, digital takes on much more, I think, you know, it's taking on a much broader remit and also much more customer-facing centric as well, right?
You would hope. It's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And it's that whole piece of, you know, one of the reasons I think there are a couple of reasons mobile center of excellence has failed. So I'll say why, and I actually agree with something you said there. A mobile center of excellence almost has to exist as a startup in the company. They have to have autonomy.
Empowerment.
It's very difficult to take an existing team and brand it. Okay, you're now the mobile center of excellence.
That's right.
Because unless you separate them out and give them authority to do some things, it's very difficult for them to start looking at data and reach into all these silos and say, we can help you do X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
But it can be done. But that requires a team to actually, you know, pull from different places and the people from different places.
And then, you know, what the biggest pain point that I think you and I had this conversation the last couple of years around the COE, where the rubber hits the road is funding, right? Who funds it?
And the truth of the matter is, because I had this conversation with a former boss, it can actually pay for itself after it gets the first. You have to get two or three projects under your belt or started. But it can very quickly pay for itself because you become the model to go to. But to your point, which I think is a great point, a mobile COE shouldn't exist for more than 2 or 3 years. Any center of excellence should eventually die off, because if you do it properly, it becomes competency of all of IT. And even better, if you're going to really do a center of excellence right, forget whether it's mobile, digital transformation, anything else. Once you get started and you start being successful, the smarter thing to do is to start rotating your people in and out. So you've got 20 people who are great at, you know, maybe only 10. You have 10 people who are really great at mobile and understanding and helping people build apps, governance, all that. rotate those people back into IT, a few of them at a time, bring new people in so that everybody gets those competencies, and those competencies spread not just throughout IT, but you also need business people as part of the COE.
Exactly.
And if you do it, a COE should actually want to kill itself after 2 or 3 years. And then I would say, yes, you could have a COE for CRM or anything else, but they should always be temporary. You shouldn't need a COE that exists forever. Because if you do, you might as well just create a company and go out and do that. I mean,
I agree. And I think another compounding thing with why it's kind of gone away, but I will say this. I mean, I ran a CIO event, in the Netherlands with a lot of global companies not too long ago. And we had actually a breakout table termed COE. And I'm like, no one's going to turn up to this thing. You know, we had a lot of the top topics, you know, security, app development, user experience design, big data analytics into apps, I mean, big, you know, very important topics. And then we had COE. And half the room turned up to the COE section. I was like, you got to be kidding me. And these are companies that are mature. Yeah, and they want, you know what they want to talk about, though? They want to talk about multimodal IT. They want to talk about implementing Agile. And how do you get started in, you know, getting the wherewithal across a number of different streams, whether that's funding, empowerment.
How do I move fast?
Initiate the change. It's change management. How do I initiate the change within my business to get it executed? And I think that's, unfortunately, that's where the conversation around COEs has shifted. And that's why we don't hear much about them anymore.
Well, but everything you answer there can be answered by a good COE. And I think what's interesting there is you talk about digital transformation, which is, I don't love the term just because I just see it's the next model of saying, hey, there's more stuff I want, you know, and sometimes it's carving out bigger fiefdoms.
Right.
But what I liked about what you said about digital transformation is focus on the user needs. You've heard me talk about the FUN principle. My listeners have heard me talk about it before. And the way all these things succeed is when you actually are talking to your users. There have been, you know, we had a couple topics here today where people were saying, well, how do you do this? And L'Oreal did a thing and did a case study yesterday about what they did and how they really changed their whole Salesforce by creating a set of apps using the Salesforce app and doing a bunch of other things. But they, you know, they talked about the fact that when they put this project together, they pulled in salespeople. You know, they picked the top salespeople, yep, or whatever. But when they got to the end, they said, test in the field with your person, with your sales. We went out there and we did day in the life, day after day after day. We took developers and put them out there with the test app. So when the user had a problem, they saw it firsthand. It wasn't a report that came in. They got to see it and they got to understand how people work. And I think if that's what part of what digital transformation is, I think that's awesome. I think we should be doing that anyway.
Yeah. It's funny because that's really where companies are struggling now. They want that real down nitty gritty practical insight on what they need to be doing to change the model. We've been talking about federating IT to the business or getting business and IT closer together. This is really where it's happening. And I think that's what's fascinating because we're starting to see the changes within IT unfolding within, you know, under our eyes now, or, you know, and in front, you know, front seat view of this based on these sort of companies that are doing this now. It's a huge opportunity. There's just a lot of companies that haven't got there. A lot of companies are, you know, they're not server huggers, but, you know, they are, you know, they're still, it's back office stuff still, you know, that's a big pivot for many companies. And another thing that we found quite fascinating with some of our surveys is that employees are demanding this now. Like, I think one of the stats that I love, some of our most recent employee research, is that it's close to 60% of employees, when asked, said that IT needs to be closer to the business strategy of the organization. Their IT departments and their IT strategy need to be closer to the business strategy of the organization. So the companies that are in this mature end, coming back to the maturity model, are the ones that get that. You know, they've created that organizational change to allow IT to be able to do that. But many companies haven't got that change.
It's funny because a lot of people, we talked about mobile strategy today. We've talked about IT strategy before. And the misnomer there is, well, you got to go create your IT strategy. Your IT strategy is your business strategy. And they feed one another. And if you don't look at it that way, you're already hosed because you can't have an IT strategy, a mobile strategy, digital transformation strategy, any of this stuff unless you understand what the business strategy is and are, and what the business objectives are. And it's piecing that stuff together that helps you move on. So what are you seeing as some examples? Let's actually talk about some of the mature companies. You don't have to name them because I don't want to put you on the spot. But what are the types of things you're seeing? What are examples that you can at least give me an industry and give me an example?
Yeah, there was my favorite example is I've seen present, and I know the CIO quite well. I won't name the name of the company, but they're a manufacturer, 7,000 to 8,000 employee company, so not a massive company, but they're in the manufacturing business currently, and so the story there was that they were in the business of saying no for a long period of time, and they had a very negative reputation, they had low IT satisfaction scores, and they had a shadow IT effect. They had employees going off doing all kinds of different things. So they brought in my colleague, so the new CIO, and the first thing he noticed is that IT had a really bad brand internally within the business.
IT was the department of no, not the department of K-N-O-W, which is one of my favorite sayings.
That's a good classic slogan, isn't it? Yeah. So, you know, and I think this is how they self-build themselves. So they probably picked up that quote from you because I remember seeing that in one of their slides. So a couple of things what this organization did. So the first thing they did is they went mobile, right? And they started into the collaboration space. So they made a big call on the collaboration and productivity space. They went into the cloud. They elected Google. Google was an interesting choice for them. They were an older legacy business in this sense. And they decided that going to Google was a huge platform for IT to reinvent their brand internally within the business.
It's interesting picking a platform to reinvent your internal brand.
Exactly. It's almost backwards. You talk to Google, a lot of the leads for a lot of, because they do a lot of innovation workshops around Google Apps, because a part of that is change management.
Of course, they want to sell it.
Exactly. And it's change management, right? You're coming off Office into Google Apps. But they will tell you that those workshops are very much innovation, business innovation led. How do I establish a culture of innovation into my organization? So Google do a lot. So the company kind of bought the Kool-Aid a little bit on the Google and went on to Google, went mobile. But more importantly, to do this, allowed them to completely change the IT model. So IT model was a very monolithic top-down organization previously. It became much more of a distributed model where, first of all, at a top, they completely don't call it IT. You're not allowed to call it the IT department. You have to call it business innovation. It's the business innovation function. So they are the source of any, if an employee has an idea for innovation, they are the source. And they, within the org structure of that IT department, well, I suppose business innovation function, and they had core pillars. So they had, you know, some of the traditional stuff like the governance and the security and governance piece, which is a department. They had they had a factory. So they did do some development that they had centralized. So there was so they could respond to requests for apps in particular. They had a support arm. So, you know, there is a support business, even though there was a lot of self-service. And they had this third piece, which I think they called, and I can't remember it exactly. It was about business process reengineering and so that function to the point they were making earlier was where the IT department was fully situated in all the various different lines of business within the organization. So, entirely new model reengineered around mobile and collaboration, in order for the IT department to rebrand itself because it had a legacy image internally within the employee base that a new CEO had to come in and completely reinvent for the company. I think that's fascinating. I really do. I think it's, when you think about, a company that needs to do innovation, and wants to have the reputation internally to do innovation, a real interesting, and obviously I've seen this presentation a few times, and there's just the other organizations that come up because he's got some real practical insight as to how they managed to initiate that change management.
That actually sounds really interesting. We have a little more than 10 minutes left. I'm going to switch gears on you a little bit because you and I actually argued on Twitter a couple of weeks ago. And don't say, you said, let's do this as a podcast. So, we should actually hit it. You made a statement about Apple, the enterprise, and Android, and Microsoft. I'm going to ask you to kind of
Qualify.
Well, that. Say what your statement was.
Yeah.
And then qualify. And some of it's based obviously on your research, but some of it I think is also gut feel.
It's gut feel a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you also visibility is what's going on out there, right? I mean, so the conversation unfolded about the fact that I made a point to say, look, I'm slightly fearful that we're moving to a place in the enterprise around mobile in particular, where we're not going to have platform heterogeneity. So Apple is dominating the enterprise, and
research is backing that up.
Oh, it is absolutely so. I mean, Android is there. Don't get me wrong, but I think we're moving to a place, you know, as I've talked about, you know, in some of my presentations, where this stuff is that there's high dependency on this technology now. You know, over the next 3 to 5 years. The trajectory is that there's going to be more workflow. There's going to be more mission critical applications running on these devices. And part of that dependency on the technology, particularly when you're running a lot of those business processes over top of mobile devices or with mobile devices, will mean that, you know, companies will have to, in order to, you know, make those, you know, those strategic bets, I think will probably elect to go single platform in that space unless, you know, and this is a big question about Android and what is the future for Android? And
well, you have Android for work. You know,
you've got Android for work.
I can say I'm hearing a lot more companies asking about it and talking about it. But that being said, you know, you're talking about a single platform and all that. And I think part of your statement that kind of got me going was you felt that the single platform and the closeness of what you termed Apple, and I don't think it was closed the way it came across in your tweet, and again, 140 characters, was actually going to hurt the enterprise. And I kind of said, hang on, as opposed to going to the actual conversation itself, I'll just say, I think Apple gives you a stable platform. And you know, one of the things is I don't have to deal with, unless I'm buying all the same devices, and I can do that. I can go all in on Samsung. I can go all in on HTC or LG. Although I'm not always assured of updates. That's a whole different story. You know, there's Motorola, everybody else.
Yep.
But unless I buy Nexus devices, and to be fair, I don't know about your research. I'm not seeing anybody buying Nexus devices as the device for the business.
Not the enterprise. No.
And so therefore, I kind of look at it and say, it's easier in some cases to say, I have a single platform. I'm building to that. I know what to expect, and I know that next year, whatever comes out, it's going to support this.
Yep.
You know, I can tell you, you know, Sanofi, we had a couple of years worth of different iOS devices, and yes, we had to make some changes as the new iOS version came out, but we were fairly confident what would be supported and what wouldn't be supported.
Yeah, I understand. And I mean, I think the comment was born and the kind of engagement is born much more from a market point of view, right? So I think it's healthy to have platform heterogeneity, OS heterogeneity in the enterprise.
I don't disagree with you there.
I really do, you know, but I think we're moving to a place where that actually may not necessarily be the case. And I think because there's some big questions on Android. There are absolutely, and if you look, you'll know this from your experience at Sanofi. You know, if you look at the companies that are doing Android, you know, there's a marked difference between what they're doing on iOS versus what they're doing on Android, what services they deliver to their employees on Android.
Part of it being that iOS was certainly easier in the beginning. The hooks were there in EMM, MDM, and Android's, you know, Google and Android, the Android for Work team that, you know, a lot of them came from Android.
Yep.
Yeah. Have done a great job.
They've done a great job.
And you have to give them kudos on that.
It's just not got to market yet. You know, that's the thing, right? The carriers are holding it back, and you know, there's OEM complexity around Android. Okay, but you know, I think this is the big question, right? This is where I think this conversation should go, and I think Google should step into this, right? Like, this is an opportunity for Google. I think maybe with Nexus or maybe with Samsung, but I think they have to really look at if they take the enterprise seriously. And I know Google for Work is kind of, you know, solving some of the low-lying challenges around Android, but the bigger strategic challenges that Android face, I think Google needs to step in and lead those. And if they take the enterprise seriously, that will involve, to your point, that is going to involve things like doing, I don't necessarily think it's forking, but you're going to have to do updates. You're going to have to do regular patches to the enterprise. I've run roundtables where big global companies have said, we want this from you. We want this either from you, Mr. Samsung, or we want this from you, Google. We got Microsoft now selling updates as a service around Windows 10 to the businesses.
So
it's an interesting opportunity.
So that's the other wrench in the room. Microsoft did the event yesterday.
Yep.
I know you've read up on some of it since, yesterday. We had a little bit of a conversation about it. Two new devices.
Yeah.
Phones.
Yeah.
On the new laptops. Yeah. They have the universal apps. They have Continuum. They have the ability to take a phone, plug it into a monitor, keyboard, and mouse. And although I like the idea, I see that being more of a, at least in the Americas and maybe in a lot of mainstream Europe, I don't see that being hugely popular because I think that you don't have an empty desk.
Yeah.
You either have a laptop dock, which maybe you use your phone for, but you already have stuff that's there and that takes a couple of years to get in. But
yeah.
Where do you see Microsoft playing? You know, it's a, in mobile, they're not there in the business. And they've started on the consumer side.
Right.
They've now made a big play to business.
Yeah.
Where do you see it fitting from the analyst side and what you're looking at on your research?
It's a big question, isn't it? You know, and obviously we're only looking at this from the device business, right? Because obviously with Office and
Azure, and to be and fair, yeah, I got to say, I'll apologize for interrupting because I want to give you like a good 3-4 minutes to say that I happen to love Windows Phone OS. You know, I was playing with it since Windows Phone 7, and I love the fact that it was really different from, you know, iOS and Android, which, you know, kind of take the single app piece. The live tiles is interesting. I love the pieces they've put there. They have Cortana. You see all these intelligence assistants across all three. How does that fit and play in the enterprise? Is there enough there to attract people? Because Microsoft's absolutely making a play for the enterprise with this stuff.
They are absolutely, you know, not underlying all the APIs and security that is part of the platform is hugely changed compared to previous, Windows Phone 8. What's fascinating is Windows 10 mobile. If you look at it from a mobile context, you know, I was running the Insider on my Lumia 930 less than 3 months ago, and it was a very science experiment. You know, there was a lot of bugs. So they moved that forward pretty quickly and obviously announced these devices yesterday. And it's a real tricky conundrum. I think if you look at it strictly from the Windows 10 opportunity point of view, it absolutely starts at PC desktop, right? It starts on that Surface line, and I think in the enterprise, right? Obviously, this is a consumer orientation here, which is doing well in terms of the upgrades. But for the enterprise, in my opinion, the companies are going to look at Windows 10. They're going to start there first, okay? And so it's relevancy, the phone relevancy, and those USBs that they're talking about, like Continuum and Universal Apps, are going to be born from how successful the Surface line, predominantly the Surface line, gets into the enterprise. That is still hugely early days for companies. Now, I know most companies are electing to upgrade their existing hardware to Windows 10. So, but I think it's more the lightweight devices, in my opinion, for the enterprise, that if they get successful, that's the platform upon them to get into the phones. I think the phones as a standalone is only going to be niche for the time being. It's popular in some markets. It's popular in Europe. It's popular in other places in B2B because they're cheap. As you and I were talking about yesterday, you can buy, as one CIO said to me, I can buy 8 of these for an iPhone. You know, if I'm rolling out these to, 30,000 employees, like one of the Spanish banks I was speaking to very recently, and like they went 100% mobilization. They want to do it all corporate owned. And they looked at all the devices out there, and they did that with Microsoft phone, Windows phones, to the risk of a little bit of the user. They didn't have a lot of change management, though, with the users, surprisingly. But they elected phone because, they can buy eight of them for one.
It was cheaper. They, at the time that they did this, I think I know which bank you're talking about, Android wasn't ready for you.
Right.
The cheap Androids don't have
exactly
the stuff built in. And that's
exactly
not saying
right.
that Android's cheap, but the ones that were inexpensive, that were available, just didn't have the hooks that people needed. Interestingly, though, the issue with the cheaper Windows phones is the lack of RAM and some of the other things that, I know that some of the places that have gone with them have all of a sudden looked at and said, either we can't update or we're having issues with these pieces. And it's very interesting.
One of the things I've got to say, though, and this is where, maybe another topic for the podcast is distribution of hardware, particularly around mobile for the enterprise is changing rapidly. Like, traditional channels of operators and carriers and other things, they're still there, but we're starting to see this brought out into the IT channel. Companies say, look, I'll get the data plan from the carrier. I'll go to the IT channel. I want to buy a solution around the device. I want services around the device. I'll go to the IT channel for that. Or increasingly, and I think it's fascinating to see now that Apple is going direct to the market, a direct engagement. And I've seen this anecdotally that they want, you know, companies want to buy off directly. But it's starting to ramp up in terms of the trend, in terms of the, you know, we're seeing in our survey. I think 25% of our most recent decision maker survey said to us that they'd actually like to buy from the OEM direct, which is a fascinating statistic from an enterprise point of view. But when you think about, you know, the updates as a service, when you think about what Apple, you know, in Windows context, so I'm buying from Microsoft an update as a service for my OS. When you think about what Apple's doing direct.
And let's just take a second to define that. Normally, Windows had sort of gone the route of Apple of the updates came out, they were applying them, and Windows has said, you'll be able to delay an update or apply it as needed.
That's right.
Which is not something they're giving to the consumer. So that's when you talk about updates as a service, let's just,
For the enterprise.
Yeah, exactly, so for, right, for the enterprise, yeah, it was, yeah,
exactly,
they yeah. got a little more control than consumers did.
Exactly. And so you've got those two streams. I think you're interestingly now in a place where, you know, you can feasibly see Microsoft saying, okay, we'll start to sell you some of our hardware directly as well. I mean, I think a part of what will be successful for the phones will be how they can bundle and, you know, and leverage the existing distribution of Surface and how Surface expands.
Sort of like iPhones have had a halo effect to Mac.
Correct.
We're going to see the Surface have a halo 100%. Effect to,
and that's Windows totally buys in this continuum experience, you know, computing that
probably Microsoft more the universal that, apps,
and also it flies into the universal apps, which is very much part of this Windows 10 vision that Microsoft have. And so basically meaning that if Microsoft can start making it easier to buy this hardware off Microsoft, and think about all those ELAs companies have around Office. And if I can tack on some of those hardware purchases into that, you know, in some of these scenarios, and this is kind of a little bit out there in terms of the thought, but I think we're seeing that trend of companies want to go direct, and Microsoft are obviously selling some of these, you know, these updates direct. You know, maybe that's an opportunity for Microsoft as well, and leveraging some of those traditional distribution arms as well. So that will remains to be seen how they do there.
Yeah, it's
interesting.
That's
the opportunity.
Because you've seen a lot of the inexpensive Windows phones sell a lot in parts of Europe and a few other places, not so much in the U.S. And I always chalk that up to the fact that when Windows Phone 7 had come out, if it had had the mature business pieces at the same time, the enterprise pieces,
that's
of
right.
being able to do phone, you know, VPN,
amazing
Wi-Fi, all those sorts of things, Windows Phone actually would have been quite successful. And maybe would have hit the spots. I don't know that would hit where Gartner and Forrester say it would be, which is 16.9 versus the 2% that it's at now or less, depending on where you are. And there are places that it's obviously more, but you know, the general, if you add it all up. But the fact is now, I think they've lost a lot of that consumer piece and they're not,
if you look at the marketing around it, it's like they're going after the productivity. You know, the individual productivity space, kind of the business space. You're looking at the Microsoft fan, you know, the guys who really gravitate to Microsoft technology as like the core constituencies for the phones. They're not saying this is, you know, lifestyle or consumer led, you know, demographics that you see in the other categories.
Yeah. And,
fascinating. So
and to be fair, you know, having been a Nokia fan and loving, you know, being able to take photos with it and, you know, having quite a few Windows phone, you know, I get to play with everything, or at least I used to. So, you know, it's one, you know, I had a 1020, all that. Do like a lot of, you know, what they showed yesterday, across the line,
isn't it? That's the key.
Very, very interesting stuff. And it's certainly going to be fun to watch going forward. I promised you 40 minutes. We're already over that. What last thoughts you want? You know, yeah. Look, we can go another 15. I actually have to catch a plane soon.
I know you do.
But any last thoughts, anything, you know, any subjects you want to change here?
I think, you know, I'm curious to get your perspectives on, what some of the core themes that you're seeing at VMware and, you know, your new role at VMware. What are you seeing inside your customer base comparative? You know, I know at Sanofi, you had a very Sanofi view of the world. Now you're seeing it broader, across the customer base. What do you think customers are really grappling with at the moment?
Great question. And for those of you that don't know, 6 months ago, I joined VMware. This podcast is obviously neutral, which is, and you know, it's mine. It's not a VMware podcast, but great question, because I can talk about that either way. And it's very interesting talking to companies. A lot of them, you know, security is a big one. Security around apps, security.
Is it ramp security? Do you think it's grown in the last 12 months?
Yes, because I think that people, you know, the companies that have gotten at least through what you call the foundational level, they figured out how to manage devices and all that. But now they're worried about their apps. They're worried about, you know, you're actually seeing some malware, mostly like the China piece. Now, of course, you have to be in China to get it, you know, Asia. But some of that's going to happen here. They worry about that. They worry about rooting. And, you know, I think rooting and jailbreaking, you can cause havoc without doing that. So I think that's a misnomer. I also think you're seeing a lot of security companies stepping up. It's kind of fun to watch not just our partnerships, all the EMM companies partnering with all the Israeli startups, which are all based out of the IDF.
Yeah.
You know, there's the union and the IDF, and they all know each other.
Yeah.
And they're all doing one way, shape, or form of that. And that's kind of cool to watch.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Yeah.
You know, sometimes I wonder, what if they all got together and kind of joined their companies or created an offering? Some big security companies would have some stuff to worry about.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's because right now you piece it together.
That's right.
And they're tackling one thing, but if you piece 3, 4, 5 of them together, you actually can have a nice solution. I think that we're hearing a lot of companies talking about, and same thing you brought up, how do I get to the next level? What am I looking at? What's the app life cycle? How do I make sure that my people are happy? How do I make sure stuff's getting out there? How do I measure it? They don't like to use the word enable. I use it a lot, but what they're really asking is, I've done this. How do I see more productivity gains? How do I really unleash? And it's not the mobile beast. It's how do I unleash the productivity and efficiency beast in my people by allowing them to do what they need to do when and where they need to do it. And the workers are asking for it, which is the really cool thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, it's a lot of that. And thank you for turning my podcast around on me. So, yeah, I'm toying with one of these days of getting somebody to guest host and make me the guest. So I have to answer a bunch of these.
Oh, I'll gladly do that for you, Brian.
So Nick's already volunteered here. But what this means that, and we do a bunch of these by Skype and everything else, but I think we'll make you do it in person. So you can't be such a stranger. He's across the pond, obviously, in London. And if I recall, you're not a United fan, are you?
No. I arrived in the UK when they won the treble.
So you are United. So yeah,
but they're not my local club, unfortunately. My local club, because I don't live in Manchester. My local club's Fulham. And they haven't done so well recently.
Yeah, although I do have a soft spot for Fulham because they're very well known for
American players.
But yeah, yes, anybody who follows me on Twitter knows that I'm a footy fan. So if Man United's playing, it becomes important. But Nick, I want to thank you for taking the time.
No, thanks for having me. It's always good.
People can certainly follow you at Nick McGuire on Twitter.
Right.
And we'll publish the website. You've done some great research there. They did a great article blog post on some research.
That's right.
This past Monday.
Enterprise Apps Tech's got it. And on purchasing, how purchasing shifted. Some of the themes we talked about.
Yeah. So that would be great to look at. But, listeners, please take a look. I was going to say readers, listeners. And thank you.
Thank you. Pleasure. Really enjoyed it.
And listeners, this has been episode number 217 of the Mobilecast, and we will be coming to you again soon.